There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and according to the World Health Organization, there are about 1.38 million new cases and 458,000 deaths from breast cancer each year. It is by far the most common cancer in women worldwide, both in developed and developing countries. In low, middle-income countries, the incidence has been rising steadily in the last few years due to the increase in life expectancy, increased urbanization, and adoption of a Western lifestyle. Dr. Pamela Munster, Professor of Hematology and Oncology, Director of the Early Phase Clinical Trials Program and Associate Director of Investigational Therapeutics at the University of California, San Francisco, is here to give us the latest. She's also a visiting consultant at Zuleika Hospital and is here as part of Zuleika Hospital's breast cancer awareness campaign. She is herself also a survivor of breast cancer. Dr. Pamela, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure being here.
Always a pleasure having you. Now, we hear so much about breast cancer. The awareness campaigns are everywhere. You know, October is the pink month everywhere in the world. But I want to start from the top and just ask you about breast cancer. What is it? What are the different ways that it can manifest itself?
So in a nutshell, breast cancer is a tumor that arises in the breast, typically starts with one or two cells being abnormal, and then it takes a very long time until tumor grows. So this, what I'm stressing is it takes a long time until tumor grows. So that gives us opportunities to actually get tested. How do we test for breast cancer? By an exam, looking at how the breast changes, whether there's abnormalities, or doing a mammograms. And we recommend mammograms in anyone over 50 and ideally starting at 40. So that's how we detect a tumor. When tumors are small, tumors that are under 2 centimeters, it's 100% cure rate. So no one should be dying from breast cancer.
It's just, does it surprise you that we still see this as the biggest cancer killer amongst women worldwide?
I think it does not surprise me because we have awareness, but awareness is not completely translated into action.
When we're looking at figures, nearly 40% of cancer cases diagnosed in the UAE, they are of breast cancer, and over 20% of all female deaths in the country are attributed to breast cancer as well. Now, there are two different types of breast cancer, I believe. So, I mean, which is kind of more prevalent? Which is the one that you see more of?
So breast cancer comes in different ways. There's the breast cancer that is hormonally driven, meaning like it's estrogen receptor positive. And then there's what we call the triple negative. There's a third one that is HER2 positive. So that speaks to how we treat them differently. The majority of the very young women have triple negative breast cancer. It's a more difficult breast cancer to treat, typically needs chemotherapy. It's typically more commonly seen in the younger woman.
When we're talking about a younger woman, what age group are we looking at? Because this is something that there's misconceptions about, you know, the ages where breast cancer is most prevalent. So what are we looking at in terms of age?
There is no age. You're never too young to have breast cancer. You're never too old to have breast cancer. My most tragic cases are always those young women who come in and say, well, either someone told them that they were too young to have breast cancer, or they thought they were too young to have breast cancer and let a tumor grow and grow and grow and not come in.
I mean, so the most common age where women should start to be screening themselves and going for a mammogram. What are we looking at there?
So the average age for breast cancer in the UAE is about 48. However, there is a family history or family predisposition to have cancer or having a genetic mutation to have cancer. Those women can present at fairly young age, late 20s, early 30s. And so we women who come from families with breast cancer or have genetic mutations for breast cancer, we start at 25. The average woman, we start screening at 40. But I cannot stress enough, it's really important if you have any changes in your breast, nipple discharge, change in contour, color, form, or redness, don't ignore that.
Let's go through those symptoms. in more detail so that we can look at the kind of things that we should be watching out for, you know, whether it's you going to do a mammogram or checking yourself at home. So what are those symptoms that we're looking for?
So the most common way a tumor presents is by having a lump, anything round in your breast. You examine your breast, you put your hands over your breast when you shower, and you find something that doesn't feel quite normal. So this is common, but then frequently in young women, that aspect doesn't happen. So when you see that the skin gets red or the nipple starts to go inward, or what we call nipple inversion, or you have dimpling of the skins, these are all like early warning signs and they shouldn't be ignored. Another important part is like breast cancer could actually involve the lymph nodes in the armpit or on the neck. So if you find anything that's lumpy and bumpy in your armpit or in the neck, that's also concerning.
Okay. And in terms of those lymph nodes in the armpit and that kind of thing, you hear some kind of you hear people talking about how things like deodorant, you know, that is going to be causing breast cancer and that kind of thing. Is that true? Is there any truth in that?
No, there's I think we have clearly disproven that deodorants, at least in the current contents of deodorants, are very safe. Mm. And that's not things. I mean, they clear are risk factors, and I hope we get an opportunity to talk about risk factors of things that women actually can do.
Yeah, because those are all things that you need to feel empowered as somebody who can do something about it. And this is something that you know a lot about as well. But it's important to know that a lot of breast lumps are not necessarily cancerous. So you actually do need to make sure that you go and you do get it checked out. When we come back, I'm going to ask you about whether we've seen an improvement in the rates of the numbers of the women who are going out and getting themselves tested, getting mammograms, getting themselves checked out in hospitals. You've also got a book coming out, which is very exciting. Yes. And as well, please do share your stories around it too. This is Eye on Health on Dubai Today with me, Sally Musa, talking all things breast cancer. It is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. And she is here to answer your questions on 4001 or on the Dubai Eye app. Maria has texted in, Dr. Pamela. She says, my great aunt had breast cancer when she was 60. Does this mean that I could have the breast cancer gene? I am 38 years old and have never had a mammogram.
Complicated question and a very good one. So that she never had a mammogram is okay. We don't recommend mammograms at age under 50 or under 40, depending what country you're living, unless you carry a gene. Now, is Maria likely to carry a gene? Hard to say, because that was exactly what happened to me. I had a grandmother who was in her mid-60s before she had breast cancer, so I was not considered high risk. My father was fine. He was a single child. And then I found myself with breast cancer and a gene mutation predisposing me for breast cancer. So in my case, I was really lucky. Once I knew that I had the gene, my breast cancer was found very, very early, so I could take care of everything. So do I recommend that Maria is going to get checked for her gene? No, but what I'd like for her to do is like go check in with her doctor and find out whether doing genetic testing for a breast cancer mutation would make sense. So I wouldn't recommend this to do just like going online and ordering yourself a test, but check in with a doctor. You want to go through counseling before you do that.
And that's a really important point to talk about, the fact that you do need that initial consultation, that initial discussion with your doctor, with the specialist who understands these things and can help you figure out the right course of action as well, because it's quite a journey. It is, you know, a big, long journey, one that you've been on yourself. Of course, famously, we saw Angelina Jolie, you know, she got tested for the gene. It was something that ran in her family. She got tested for it, had a double mastectomy. It is not a small thing.
No, it is not a small thing. And I think this journey should start with a conversation with the doctor whom you trust and whom you have a good relationship. And keep in mind, if you if you're not going to a doctor and you end up with a double mastectomy, you're going to see a doctor and end up with a conversation and hopefully a plan. I think a lot of women are having this fear that if they go and see a doctor, then someone will talk them into something horrendous. As a doctor, I like to think of myself as a friend and a consultant to the patient rather than someone who forces someone into something dreadful.
Yes, definitely. Another question, or in fact a comment, on something that we mentioned earlier, saying antidepressants can be a cause. It sounds like a statement, but this is something that you refuted earlier. You said, no, actually, deodorants and antiperspirants don't have an impact on whether you're going to get breast cancer or not.
As of now, with the newer antiperspirant, anti-deodorant, what have you, like, no, there is no link to breast cancer. It is quite safe to use an antiperspirant or anti-deodorant.
And this is a myth that has been now debunked. And we've got more of your questions coming in. Is there a genetic test that can help identify if you carry the gene and are prone to breast cancer or any type of cancer? This is what we're talking about here. There is a test. What are the genes that show whether you are possibly predisposed to having breast cancer? And just take us briefly through what does the test actually involve?
So what does it mean to have a genetic mutation for breast cancer? That means in your genes that are given to you from your father and from your mother, a certain subset of genes may be abnormal. That abnormality then transpires itself into having a higher risk for breast cancer. The BRCA1 and 2 genes coming from breast cancer 1 and 2 genes are the most common. The other genes as ATM, CHEK2, there's about 10 genes that are associated with high risk of breast cancer. But BRCA1 and 2 are the most common and probably the most severe ones of those. There are tests for that. These tests are now as low as $100, so they actually have become very affordable. But again, I really would like to urge people not just go online and buy one of those tests, which you could do. You can go on a website and get that test.
Is it something that you can do at home?
Yeah, you can do this. You can order the test. It comes to you. You can put a saliva sample in a tube and send it back, and you end up with a BRCA testing. I just wouldn't recommend doing it quite like that because the consequences are quite significant. Mm. So you don't want to do this by yourself.
Of course. But take us through the risk factors that come with a possibility of breast cancer. Okay, so we're looking at age. This is something that we have discussed earlier. Genetics, that's what we're looking at here now. But what else can be a risk factor, and what can we do to help ourselves to prevent getting it or even treating it early?
So there's two types of risk factors. The one is the ones you can do something about is, and the ones you can't. You cannot choose your father. I couldn't choose my father. I'm very happy with what I got, but nonetheless, I didn't choose my parents. I did not choose when I wanted to have my first period, nor can I choose when I have my last one. So these are also risk factors. However, I can choose to crawl out of bed in the morning and exercise first, not necessarily something my body really wants, but I think it's really important that we do this.
So because body weight, your body weight and how much you exercise, this is very important in controlling that.
Yes, obesity and sedentary lifestyles are very clearly linked to breast cancer, there's no doubt. So that's something any woman can do something about it. You should reduce your intake of alcohol to probably less than a drink a day. And there's much discussion how big a glass is between what constitutes one drink. But alcohol has been associated. Smoking has a weaker link, but smoking is bad on every level. So we'd never recommend anyone to smoke.
Of course. Just coming back to periods and when you get your period, how does that impact the onset of breast cancer?
So the breast cancers are linked how long you have high estrogens and progesterone levels around. So once you enter puberty, that age depends. And then when you enter menopause, that determines the duration where you're in a premenopausal state.
Okay, so it's the higher your levels of estrogen, the higher likelihood that you may get it. Is that right?
It's probably a little bit more complicated. It's like we know that estrogens are normal and progestins are normal. We know that intake of hormone replacement therapy that includes progestins are associated with a high risk of breast cancer. The intake of estrogen alone has actually not been associated with breast cancer, but progestins are.
Okay. Your questions are coming in on the Dubai Eye app and on 4001. Another question here saying, do radio frequencies have a cancerous impact on our health? For example, using cell phones, Wi-Fi frequencies, is that involved at all?
So far, we don't have a lot of evidence to that fact. Now, there's a lot of research going on finding whether there's a link. So far, we haven't seen this with breast cancer. Breast cancer is really a cancer driven by hormones, and having extra fatty tissue is an extra source of hormones. And it's like, I cannot stress enough, it's like the increase in weight is so clearly associated with an increase in breast cancer. And, you know, the United States really has exported their bad habits and a bad lifestyle. So I think we need to go back and revert that.
We definitely do. We need to get healthier. Easier said than done. We're going to talk more about that in just a moment. We've got Dr. Pamela Monster, Professor of Hematology and Oncology at the University of California, San Francisco, here with us. She is also working with Zuleika Hospital on their breast cancer awareness campaign. Dr. Pamela Monster, Professor of Hematology and Oncology at the University of California, San Francisco, is here in studio with us talking all things breast cancer in this Breast Cancer Awareness Month that we are in at the moment. And so please do send your questions to her, 4001, or on the app. We have another one here saying, this might be off topic, but what about a breast cyst, Dr. Pamela? Some people may confuse it for a lump. How often do you need to get a cyst checked, especially if it has been there for more than 7 years?
Well, cysts are very common in the breast, and they're typically very easy to spot on mammograms and ultrasounds. So the doctor who's following this cyst usually has a good idea whether they're stable or not. I think a lot of these things is, are they changing? If they're changing, we want to follow more closely. Otherwise, probably once a year is enough. But if they start changing and if they start getting painful, then that's a different story.
Okay. We'd left off talking about some of the risk factors associated with breast cancer and the ones we can do something about, the ones we can't do anything about. Something that we need to talk about is hormone treatments. If you're undergoing a hormone replacement therapy treatment or even using oral birth control, what kind of an effect can that have on your likelihood to get breast cancer?
The birth control pill is now considered fairly safe because we have reduced the amount of hormones that they contain to a very low level. Plus, once you take birth control pill, you're actually not producing natural hormones, so this is kept in balance. The hormone replacement therapy, meaning like once you go to menopause, is like then getting estrogen and progestin to alleviate symptoms, are safe for short period of times, and we really like to have the women have as minimum a progestin exposure as possible. The estrogens alone are probably safe, but progesterones and their analogs are not considered safe and have been associated with a higher risk for breast cancer.
Okay, what about occupational hazards? For example, in the workplace, is there anything that can link to breast cancer in the workplace? Exposure to certain carcinogens, things like that?
Very, very little, but I think the biggest problem at the workplace is that you sit around in your office all day and you take the elevator rather than taking the stairs. So in that sense, that may be an occupational hazard. It's like, so it's really important if you have a choice, take the stairs.
Always. Try and take the stairs.
And I know I sound like a broken record with the exercise and obesity, but these are the main factors we can influence.
Something that is interesting, though, in a study from 2007 that suggests working night shifts could increase the risk of breast cancer. Is that likely?
I think more and more we understand that sleep is actually really a major player in in general health, not just breast cancer. And sleep or lack thereof, or like having shift works, really has been associated with worse health. And it also has been associated with obesity. So if you don't sleep, the likelihood that you gain weight is actually a lot higher. So I think it's an indirect link. And I do think as mothers, we have to make an effort to really instill in our children that sleep is important, regular sleep is important. And this whole idea that was somewhat driven by the Clinton era that, you know, I don't need to sleep, that's actually not a good thing.
So make sure you get your 8 hours of sleep every day at least. Something that I want to move on to though now is the whole screening process. And for those of us who are going to be turning 40 or whatever it is, maybe you've never had a mammogram before. What does that actually involve and how important is it to get screened regularly?
So the hallmark of breast cancer prevention is early detection. And, you know, really not dying from breast cancer means like finding tumors earlier. And the best way for that is to have regular mammograms. So we all agree, the entire world agrees on between 50 and 70, you should have a mammogram at least every 2 years, preferably every year. We are not quite as dogmatic when it comes to women over 70, and we're not quite as dogmatic under 40, clearly not under 40, but between 40 and 50, maybe every 2 years, and there's some cases where we recommend more mammograms than others, but clearly 50 to 70 annual mammograms is our recommendation. Mammograms between 40 and 50, depending on risks.
Okay, and what kind of testing are we looking at? I mean, depending on what you're going to find in that mammogram. I mean, you could be looking at certain kinds of biopsies, image tests. What are the kind of things that you could be going through?
So typically, let's say you have a mammogram, which is a straight X-ray of the breast that looks at the breast from two areas, one vertical, one lateral. So if there's any abnormalities there, the next thing we do is we're doing a diagnostic test, taking a screening mammogram and doing a diagnostic mammogram. So that means like we're doing a more refined test, looking at more different views. The radiologist looks at more carefully. If there's still uncertainty, we do an ultrasound. And if the ultrasound, that looks like a wave, sound waves to detect things, and the sound waves are very good detecting cysts or other things. And then if that doesn't show anything, and if the radiologist is still suspicious, we do an MRI, which means now we're doing a super sophisticated test that is more expensive, but that also will detect a lot of areas that may be abnormal but not cancer. So it's then we end up with tests that show something that may not be a cancer but it just look abnormal.
Okay, so these are the kind of tests and screenings that we can go through, but let's go to diagnosis. What happens when you get diagnosed with breast cancer? And this is something that is close to your heart as well, because not only have you been an oncologist for years, but after being an expert yourself in the field, you got diagnosed with breast cancer. So take us through that.
So the next step is you have a screening mammogram, then you get the phone call, please come back for a diagnostic mammogram, and then on the diagnostic mammogram, you see abnormalities. And then the next step is you need to define what's actually the abnormality on X-ray, and that is two ways of doing this. You can do a fine needle aspiration. You take a very tiny needle and aspirate some of the cells, look at them under a microscope. Or you take a core biopsy, which is a bigger needle, and you enter the breast and take a piece of tissue out and then look at this in a pathology. So that's how typically all diagnoses of breast cancers are made. Mm-hmm. And then a lot of women who go for biopsy, or someone, just because someone gets asked to come in for a biopsy, that doesn't mean it's cancer. A lot of the biopsies actually not turn out to be cancer.
So it's important to go through that process again to make sure that you understand exactly what's going on there, exactly what's going on with your body. But what happens when you get told you do have breast cancer? What then?
Well, I think like everyone else, I thought, well, that they maybe have the wrong person, right? I thought, well, that couldn't be me, or like, you know, how can this be me? And like, I always thought, like, I'm a breast cancer expert. This should be not possible that I could have breast cancer, because, you know, life couldn't be quite that unfair. But as my friend pointed out to me when I said, why me? My friend said to me, why not you? And I think that's the question that's always there. So I was diagnosed with breast cancer. I was very, very lucky. I was diagnosed very early. I had to go through a lot of extra. I didn't have to go to chemotherapy. I didn't have to go through a lot of hormonal therapy. I had a lot of surgeries because I have the gene mutation. But my example really shows, I mean, you can get away with very little if you get diagnosed early.
It's crucially important to, you know, keep reinforcing that message, that which is why, you know, Zuleika Hospital and others are giving free screenings. The details of those are on our site, on our Dubai Today webpage on DubaiEye1038.com. But take us through as well the kind of treatments, because you've been working in this field for decades. You're at the forefront of what's going on in terms of new developments, new treatments. What can we expect to see now?
So the principles of breast cancer and not dying from breast cancer are twofold. One, we want to remove the tumor that's in the breast, and the second part is we want to prevent the tumors from spreading and settling in other organs. We don't die from actually breast cancer. We die from the tumor going to other organs, and what we call metastatic disease. That's stage 4 disease. And once someone is diagnosed with stage 4 disease, the likelihood that such a woman is alive 5 years from now is probably in the 20% range. So it's really, really, really crucial that we get diagnosed early. So the goal is then we remove the visible tumors either by just taking the tumor out or removing the entire breast if it's needed. Then what we also remove is some of the lymph nodes. We then give chemotherapy if the tumor is big or has some aggressive features, and it typically means that should kill all the cells that have escaped the breast.
Mm. Obviously, it depends on the type of cancer you have, how far it has spread. You know, you can get something as small as a lumpectomy, or all the way to a mastectomy, where pretty much everything is removed, isn't it? That can be quite difficult.
Well, nowadays, actually, a good thing is like what we do is like we remove everything under the skin. So we leave the nipple, we leave the skin. So and then we do reconstruction. You're from the outside, you should actually see very little other than a very small scar, even if you have to have a mastectomy. The cosmetic outcome should be very good. Now, the principles of medicines are you shouldn't have to have a mastectomy. If you present early, you don't need a mastectomy, as long as we can remove the tumor. And sometimes we have to give chemotherapy before to shrink a tumor so we can spare the breast. But very few women actually will need to lose the breast.
Send in your questions for Dr. Pamela Munster now. She is here from she is Professor of Hematology and Oncology at the University of California, San Francisco. And she's here with Zuleika Hospital, who are giving free breast cancer screenings as well. If you've got a question, 4001 or on the Dubai Eye app. The last few moments with Dr. Pamela, we'll be talking more about treatment options for women with breast cancer, as well as what we need to do. Is the awareness enough? Are we doing enough to prevent breast cancer? This is Eye on Health with me, Sally Musa. We've got Dr. Pamela Munster. She is a professor of hematology and oncology at the University of California, San Francisco, a friend of the show who often comes on to talk us through breast cancer, as we are doing today in Breast Cancer Awareness Month. Dr. Pamela, we were talking about the different treatments that are available at the moment. Let's talk about hormone blocking therapy.
So for those about 60% of patients with breast cancer who have an estrogen receptor positive expression or progesterone receptor positive expression, those will have medicines that reduce the stimulation by estrogen. So either we can block the receptor or we can block the conversion of precursor estrogens to estrogens. And these are several drugs around. And that's typically given as a pill for 5 to 10 years. Mm. Then there are the biologics. If someone has a HER2 overexpression of their breast cancer, we give monoclonal antibodies, and typically given for at least a year.
They're targeted drugs that target specific types of cancer.
Yeah. So about 20% of breast cancer are HER2 positive. And there we have a very specific targeted therapy that's given in conjunction with chemotherapy.
This is a very interesting comment that we've had come in a little bit earlier. All talk about women. What about the other 49.9% of the population? They get breast cancer too, I guess referring to the men there. Yes, breast cancer does happen to men. Tell us more about that.
Never want do we want to omit the men in our lives, right? Male breast cancer happens in about 1% compared to this 100% women, 1% will be a man with breast cancer. They typically estrogen receptor positive, they're often easy detectable. So there's for a breast exam in a man, it's typically very easy. We don't recommend routine mammograms in for men, but we do recommend mammograms for men with a BRCA2 mutation, a BRCA2 mutation. There we would recommend breast exams and mammograms for men.
So if they're getting tested for the gene and they do have that mutation there, then they should get a mammogram. Very interesting information to know. I did not know that men should be going for mammograms too. But like you said, it depends on the genes. We were talking about the importance of diet. One question here asking, what about soya, flaxseed? Does that help? What are the kind of foods that may help prevent cancer?
There's a lot of question whether soy is actually detrimental for breast cancer because it contains phytoestrogen or plant estrogens. We know the amount of soy that most women eat is not contributory to breast cancer. It's probably safe to eat soy, should you like to eat soy, which I'm not a huge fan of, I have to say. But I think flaxseed is good. It's like any diet that doesn't result in weight gain is a good diet.
Does the soy, though, does it affect estrogen levels? Because this is something you were talking about earlier.
No, we actually looked at that. Soy don't reduce estrogens, doesn't induce a risk of breast cancer. So the what changes your estrogen is having a diet that's lower in fat and exercise.
Mm-hmm. Okay, another question saying, hi, Sally. I heard on your show you mentioned an increase of progesterone increases the risk of having breast cancer. She says, I'm 32 years old and I'm on my second cycle of IVF and have been taking progesterone tablets and injections. Can you please ask Dr. Munster whether that increases the likelihood of having breast cancer in later years? I have a family history of breast cancer as well.
I think there's two questions here. It's like having progestins for IVF probably does not increase the risk for breast cancer. Taking progestins for years to battle menopausal symptoms does. So there's a difference in exposure. So I think fear not here. Having a family history of breast cancer probably should prompt you to get a consultation whether you should have genetic testing for breast cancer. And then if you carried the BRCA1 or 2 genes or other breast cancer predisposing genes, you probably should be approached differently.
Okay, let's talk about the prevention. That is one of the most important aspects of everything that we're going to talk about here, and particularly what you're doing with Zuleika Hospital and other places are doing it as well. But so there are going to be free screenings, there are going to be consultations. Take us through the Pink It Now campaign and what's going to be happening. What can people get involved in?
The Pink It Now campaign was first launched when I was diagnosed with breast cancer, and so it's really close to my heart because I realized that, you know, everyone who looked at me is like, how could this happen to you? And I think that's what I think is the fundamental essence is like of this campaign is it could happen to you. So you should be screened, you should have awareness. And I feel like in the UAE, there is a lot of awareness and not enough action. And what we found was very successful with this campaign. In 2014, we had 850 mammograms. We offer free mammograms to the end of December. We had 850 mammograms done. A year later it was 1800, now it's up to 3000, and we're hoping we're doubling this. So anyone comes in gets a free consultation, free mammograms to the end of the year. Bring your friends, bring yourself, mainly bring your mother. I think the important part is that a lot of our listeners are women who don't really need the mammogram yet, but the mothers is who we want you to bring in.
And sometimes, you know, the mums are the ones who are neglecting themselves and, you know, forgetting about these things that they need to get checked up. Do you think that women are afraid of coming to have a mammogram, afraid of what they might find? Is that something that you see?
I see this very often. My own mother told me once that I got her friends into a mammogram and then she had breast cancer. See what you did to her. And I tried to explain to my mom, like, yeah, but I also got her like treated early. It's like, but it's not like you give someone breast cancer by having a mammogram. I think the way to look at this is like you do a mammogram so you don't end up with bad breast cancer.
It's got to be the early screening. That is vitally important here. And this is what we are hoping for. Everyone, get down there, get your free screenings, get a consultation with an oncologist. Talk about it. It's important to get it out there and get it treated early. This is the key, is it not, Dr. Pamela?
Absolutely. It's like, I mean, this is a disease no one should die from.
There you go. Dr. Pamela Munster, she is Professor of Hematology and Oncology at the University of California at San Francisco. And thank you so much for an enlightening hour. And hopefully we get everybody down there. Thank you.
Good to be here. And thank you very much for having me.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.